He's a writer, composer, Hawaiian slack key guitar master, and, along with his brother, was a key player in the Hawaiian cultural renaissance of the 1970s. Today, Keola Beamer is collaborating with musical artists from around the world to combine sounds and textures, effectively creating a whole new musical genre. And Keola Beamer is also a cancer survivor, something which he hasn't spoken of publicly until now on Long Story Short.
Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox, produced with Sony Technology, is Hawaii's first weekly television program produced and broadcast in HD. High definition, it's in Sony's DNA.
Alohano kakou. I'm Leslie Wilcox of PBS Hawaii. When Auntie Nona Beamer passed away in April of 2008, Hawaii lost a cultural icon, a teacher, composer, hula expert, a champion of Hawaiian values. Today, Auntie Nona's elder son, Keola, continues composing and performing traditional Hawaiian and contemporary music and the Beamer family tradition of storytelling.
Well, being a part of the Beamer family was just a wonderful experience growing up with my grandparents and my mom. We were raised on the Big Island primarily at my grandfather's ranch in Waimea. So it's very beautiful up there, very remote, no electricity, beautiful, cold, clean water that came down from the mountain.
No electricity, so how'd you do your meals?
Kerosene refrigerator, kerosene lamps. And I still, when I smell that kerosene smell once in a while, it really takes me back to those days when we were growing up. Used to be number 6 in the bathtub line.
Who else was using the home?
Well, my cousins. And so we were all kind of raised together up there. My mom was a single mom. So she raised my brother and myself pretty much on her own and with the help of my grandparents. So a lot of beautiful memories. I wrote some music about those days and growing up, the beauty of Mauna Kea, the mountains so alive, so present in our lives every day. Beautiful, haunting memories.
I haven't heard very much about your dad.
Yeah.
Did you know him?
Not really. He left before my brother Kapono was born, and my brother and I about a year apart, so we didn't really know him very well. And years later, we met him, and he seemed like a nice man and everything, but we didn't have much in common because so much time had passed. I think I was 36 when I met him for the first time.
Did you feel abandoned?
I wouldn't say abandoned. There was so much love and support from our family that we really didn't know that's not the way it was supposed to be. We just had so much love and aloha from our grandparents. And
you had a father figure in the form of your grandfather?
Pretty much, yeah. He was a wonderful man and taught us how to ride horses and, rope and pretty outdoor lifestyle up at the ranch.
What's your first recollection of music in the home?
We were pretty much surrounded by it all the time. This was a family that was very very versed in the hula primarily, so many hula recitals, and so there was a lot of music, and it was in the context of living itself. Like now, maybe we'll go hear some music somewhere, or people will go, let's go hear some music. With us, it was there, So you'd wake up in the morning, Sunday morning, hear the rustling of papers, somebody reading the paper, and ukulele, then the music begins, and a lot of family parties. Auntie so-and-so always had this kind of interesting hula, and uncle did this, and
Now, I know a number of girls in your family dance hula. I think all of the girls in your family dance hula.
Yeah.
What about the boys?
We are the problem children of our family. For some reason, the women were the carriers of the culture, dating back many, many years, many generations. My great-grandmother, Helen Dishe Beamer, had to teach hula in secret, because it was frowned on back in her day.
And she was also a prolific songwriter.
Oh, beautiful composer, wonderful artist. Sometimes I feel my own work doesn't even come close to touching the hem of her skirt. She was amazing.
Did you work with her on any music?
No, because she died when I was about a year old, so I didn't have that chance.
But you grew up hearing her music because
absolutely.
It was kept alive in the family.
Yes, and still is. Yeah, she's revered in our family.
How much did your mom influence you in music?
Quite a bit. And I'm amazed at how often over the years we, you know, we were more than just mother and son. We were collaborators and best friends and Kupuna and Haumana. And so I'd often consult her on the smallest detail of a song. You know, sometimes it's kauna, the double meaning of things. So it's not as surface as it first might appear. So you need that kind of undercurrent of knowledge and culture in order to really interpret the work and understand that. We believe, as the Bhimar Ohana, that you really should try to follow the intent of the composer. You know, what is the song really, what is the composer trying to do? What is the composer trying to say? And by following that intent, you are often led in some very interesting and beautiful directions.
Which frees you to change the music?
Frees you to interpret it with in a pono way, with a heart that feels like you're doing the right thing with it.
Keola Bhimar has shown that he understands intention, composition, and culture. He has written and arranged traditional and contemporary songs, published a book of short stories, and begun exploring and creating a new collaborative musical genre. In the late 1970s, Keola collaborated with his brother Kapono Bhimar, writing and recording music on the leading edge of what became known as the Hawaiian Cultural Renaissance.
The time was right. You know, it was the renaissance of Hawaiian music is the way it's referred to now, where kids, all of a sudden, they were proud to be Hawaiian. Me too, you know. Maybe before that, not so proud to be Hawaiian. But the music helped us remember that, you know, we had something to say and it was important. And so groups like Country Comfort and C&K and in those days, Sunday Manoa, Olomana, this music was fresh and it was being created by our feelings, our relations to the world at that time, and it really struck a chord with the young people in Hawaii. So,
before you and your younger brother Kapono were performing at Territorial Tavern, I imagine you'd done music together informally most of your lives. What was your relationship like? Did you try to boss him around, or was he the smart alecky younger brother? What stereotype applies, if any?
Thank you for that question. Yeah, nothing like stereotypes. I don't know. I guess I was kind of the leader. I guess being the older brother and stuff. And you know, we did a lot of things. There's a lot of pressure. You know, there's two times in the music business when it's difficult: lack of success and tremendous success. And both those things are fraught with complication. But for the most part, you know, we had a nice run, had a great time, enjoyed it.
And I'm sure you hear all the time, you have a wonderful solo career, so does your brother, but I wish you folks would play together sometimes.
Yeah, it's kind of like, the way I would put it is we never lost our love for each other. I mean, we are blood brothers and we love each other, but we lost our love of working together. And in this business in particular, you have to love it, because then you just, if you don't love it, it's work. You know, if you love it, it's not work. And the best music comes from love. We were just tired of the idea of working together.
And personally, too, it seems. Do you not have a lot in common, even though you love each other?
We're different human beings, and that's okay. You know, that's fair. We don't all have to be alike in this world. So, you know, we try to make space for that.
I'm sure you knew I would ask you about this. Do you get tired of it? Because I'm sure a lot of people ask you, or you know they're thinking about it.
Yeah, I get tired of it. I mean, it's been a lot of years.
But I'm sure you relate to Cecilia and Kapono in that sense.
Yeah, and Robert and Roland, you know, I mean, but I've been in the business so long where I know that these projects are like stepping stones. You know, you do one and then you work very hard and you do another. But what is really interesting is the water that runs between the stones. The wonderful things that music brings into your life, the great places where you can go because of the music. Music brings people together and makes beautiful experiences. So it's often not the business of music that's anything interesting to me. It's what happens between the business of music.
You know, you're such a wonderful musician, but you're also very good with words. And of course, you're a writer. You've done a book of short stories. What are some of the artistic expressions, and what are some of the ways you express yourself creatively?
I think for me, there's an interesting Hawaiian word, kuanaʻike. It means cultural paradigm. Yeah. So I sort of view the world through a Hawaiian cultural paradigm. It was a gift from my ohana, right? So I may see things a little differently than somebody else with a different paradigm may see something. So I find this a really interesting worldview. I've been exploring Buddhism lately, because I see many parallels between Buddhism and our Hawaiian culture. And for instance, the idea of Hawaiian sort of philosophical thought is that within each individual there is a bowl of light, a beautiful bowl of light. And in Buddhism, that may be called a Buddhist nature. There's a Buddhist nature in each human being. There's a bowl of light in each human being. And you can extinguish that light or dim it by placing in the stones of aggression, anger, ignorance, and the light dims. And in Buddhism, that may be called perhaps bad karma, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they call it the three poisons, anger, greed. The idea that Buddhism embraces other cultures, other religions even, and that we should have compassion for one another. We call that aloha. You know? So I find that a really sort of interesting common grounds between the two, and that's why I kind of want to learn more about it and study it more, because I find that an interesting way to view the world and a very helpful way.
Would you say you are a Buddhist?
Yes.
And that's just in the last couple of years?
Yeah, like everything else, music brought that to me, where I played for the Floating Lantern Festival 2 years ago. And as I sat there with the Buddhist priests, and I understand, I began to understand their reverence for ancestors, same like ours, in Hawaiian culture. And I realized, what wonderful and interesting people they were. It wasn't like a gig at all. I thought I was just going to play a gig, but it wasn't. It was a very moving experience. And then this year I floated a lantern from my own mother. I wasn't anticipating that would happen, but that's life. So I lost my mom and put that lantern out in the ocean and watched it disappear.
Here's a quote attributed to Buddha. Thousands of candles can be lighted from a single candle, and the life of the candle will not be shortened. Happiness never decreases by being shared. When we invited Keola Beamer to join us for a conversation on Long Story Short, he said he wanted to speak publicly for the first time about his personal battle with prostate cancer. And he said he might be ready to speak openly for the first time about the passing of his mother, Nona Beamer.
As we speak, it's been a few months,
right.
And I know you go through different stages of grief. What are your thoughts now, 6 months after she passed?
Yeah. Well, I'd not known grief like that in my life. I didn't know that was possible to love somebody so much and then they're gone. But the grief sort of reminds me a little bit of when I was a young man surfing, and you'd sit out there on your surfboard and everything would be okay, and then this set would come in, these big towering waves, and grief is like that. You're doing pretty good, and then the grief comes in waves, and you do your best and you deal with it, and then another set comes, and this continues for a while, Because my mom was a revered Hawaiian cultural treasure, she touched many lives. And we as Beamers have to have the compassion for other people's grief too, not just our own.
Hard to take care of them when you've got to take care of yourself too.
Yeah, that's difficult, but we can do it. We have done it. My mom led a life that made a difference in the world. She made the world a better place. She touched thousands of lives and helped many, many students, and she left with dignity. How great, you know, I'd be so happy if that happened in my own life. I want to share a story with you that means quite a lot to me. The morning of her passage, Moana, my wife and I were in San Francisco, and I had this very powerful dream, and it was a young woman, a beautiful young woman, vibrant, beautiful black hair, just this unbelievable energy. And you also had the feeling with this woman in my dream that she was a person to be reckoned with, you know. And I almost didn't recognize her, but it was my mom. And she had just come to say goodbye.
Did you recognize that at the time that she was saying goodbye, or did you figure it out later?
Figured it out a little bit later. I almost didn't recognize her because I was used to taking care of my Kupuna mom, right, with the thin arms and the graying hair. But this woman was my mom before my brother and I were born. And she was beautiful and vibrant. And the word that comes to mind is joy. She was joyous. She had transcended the cocoon of old age.
You know, speaking of passing, you had a health situation which probably caused you to think of the possibility of you passing.
Right.
And people don't realize that you had prostate cancer.
Yes, about 5 years ago I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. It was a difficult time in our lives. Yeah, you're just going along, everything seems fine, and having a great life, and all of a sudden, boom, you know, sitting in a doctor's office, and you hear the word cancer, and it's about you, you know. In a way, we kind of have a saying, my friends and I, it's an old pigeon saying called NCH, no can handle, you know. So when you hear that, it's very close to NCH, you know. Mm-hmm. You kind of, I found myself kind of disappearing and looking from a distance down at the doctor and myself, and he's telling me this stuff. So, in a very interesting way, this shapes your life. To brush against your own mortality helps you realize what is important and what is not. You know, I found myself really appreciating things like sunlight. I found myself wanting to be with my wife, wanting to be with my friends. Wasn't about wanting to go to the office and do some music licensing or something, but it was more about being with the people you love, and the ocean and the sun. And I think that for people that you know, have this kind of challenge in their lives, I think it's important to try to stay positive, because this sort of idea of cancer places this matrix of fear over our lives. I think most cancer survivors and cancer patients know that fear. And we have to kind of rise above that, because, there's still life, and there's still joy, and there's still a future if you're lucky enough to catch it when it's in the early stages of development, which was my case. Yeah, so I'm kind of fine now, and 5 years out, everything seems to be working properly and happily enjoying my life. Medical technology is amazing.
Listening to you just now, I thought of something your mother said to me when we talked a few weeks before she passed away, and she said that she'd just come out of a major health scare previously, and she said, there's nothing like going through that to just wipe away any pettiness, any small stuff in your life.
Yeah,
it's gone.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I've heard this before, that cancer is a blessing. I remember the first time I heard that, I said, what kind of BS is that? How can cancer possibly be a blessing? But in actuality, it was from my life. I know that sounds so strange and so counterintuitive.
Well, what do you do now differently that you didn't or wouldn't have done then?
It just kind of cleared away the detritus of my life. You know, it made me realize, you know, it's I used to feel so guilty if I said no about playing a gig that I didn't really want to do. You know, I just feel so, oh, a person wants me, oh, guilt. And now I just, you know, I'm sorry. It's not what I want to do.
Life is short and you've got to focus.
Right. So I think I'll choose the things that I love now and be a little bit more, you know, happy to do that.
Another saying associated with Buddha, the secret of health for both mind and body is not to mourn for the past, nor to worry about the future, but to live the present moment wisely and earnestly. Speaking of quotes, I asked Keola about one I found that's attributed to him.
There's this wonderful quote. I have to ask you if it's true because it just makes me laugh. After some experiences playing in hotels and having people expect the kind of music that you really didn't want to play, you said, you encourage tourists to ask about Slack Key. There are festivals several times during the year, usually for free in public parks. Write on your guest comment card, I would like to hear some real Hawaiian Slack Key guitar in this hotel. Say no to tourist pablum. If someone plays Sweet Leilani at the restaurant, blow chunks and exit the premises. Change the world. Did you say that?
I think so. I'm sorry, I apologize for the humor of that. You know,
don't apologize, it's funny. You know,
it's basically a situation of kind of trying to create more knowledge about the Hawaiian culture and about its music. For many years, people thought the Hawaiian slack key guitar and the steel guitar were the same thing, you know. So people said, what kind of guitar do you play? Oh, is that kind of, no, it's not, you know, two different things.
And it's chicken and the egg. If Hawaiian musicians present this music, why shouldn't tourists think that that's what it is?
Right, exactly, yeah.
I know you've had arguments with others, say in slack key guitar, about how much innovation there should be. I mean,
right.
Do you keep it pristine just as it was, or do you add your own touch? What's the answer to
that? Well, that is an argument that has continued through the years. Similarly, in blues or other forms of music, there are the traditionalists who really, I play the way I was taught, and it's just the thumb and the index finger, that's it. I personally am old enough to have met Auntie Alice Namakilua. I was one of her students, and she thought that that next generation, Uncle Ray and Gabby, she thought those guys were radical. Those guys were putting in jazz chords and stuff. She said, that's not the way I, you know.
So she thought Raymond Kane would be a radical, but do you consider him a radical? Aren't you the radical?
Yeah, I guess I would not consider Uncle Ray a radical. You know, he was kind of a traditionalist, but to her ears, yeah. Mm-hmm. She had that definite pattern that she was taught by her brother, and that was what slack key should sound like. Didn't have all these kind of interesting chords that begin, you know, came in later. And so I think that as artists and human beings, you know, I am not a museum piece. You know, life changes and language changes and tastes change. So we try to respect the music of our kupuna and love it and cherish it and remember them. We remember them by their tunings, what they played. Without them, you know, these beautiful shoulders to stand upon, our way would have been much, much more difficult, you know. So we revere them, we appreciate them, Uncle Ray, Gabby, awesome people, beautiful musicians. By the same token, we have our own DNA and our own musical ideas, and we should be allowed to express them. Yeah.
Are there things going on with Hawaiian slack key now, Kihu'alu, that you don't really appreciate?
I think there's been an over-commercialization of it to a certain extent, you know, because it has been successful. I don't really spend much time thinking about that kind of stuff, but I prefer to go on my own path. I think the idea is that artists can sort of transcend boundaries. Yeah, we can. Hopefully, with the language of music, this beautiful, inclusive language of music, we can work together in creating a global village and make the world a better place, you know, make it a more interesting place, tear down some boundaries between human beings, you know. So the idea is that we can transcend these boundaries through music if we work hard at it, in collaboration, working with each other. I've learned a lot about collaboration over the years. I've done a number of projects that have been fascinating to me.
Eclectic.
Eclectic would be a very good word. I did a project, I think it was the year before last, in Amsterdam with the Javanese Gamelan Orchestra. And those guys don't even have a Western scale, you know, so it's interesting to try to combine the elements that we have in Hawaiian music with the Indonesian elements and then create a new piece, which is essentially a new sound, never existed before. Likewise, I've been blessed to work with musicians from Europe, from Asia, trying different ideas.
Do you find that people are open, or do they know what they like as soon as they hear it, or they don't like it? Do people give it a chance?
They do. Yeah, they do. This, you know, eclectic music that I've been involved with, they're very strange, very different, not your commercial path, but people, you know, it's interesting. It's different. It's
and you learn a lot about other people's cultures as well.
Oh, absolutely. It's an interesting journey to try and collaborate, create something different that never existed before.
It'll be revealing to see and hear what comes of Keola Beamer's collaborations with musicians from other cultures, just as it's revealing to hear him speak about joy and blessings, juxtaposed with stories of grief coming in towering waves. Stories like these that reveal character and life choices have great value, and we so enjoy bringing them to you on this program. At PBS Hawaii, our mission is to inform, inspire, and entertain, and we try to do that each week on Long Story Short. Mahalo to Keola Beamer for sharing with all of us. I'm Leslie Wilcox of PBS Hawaii. Ahui ho kako.
Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox is produced in HD by PBS Hawaii with Sony technology. High definition. It's in Sony's DNA.
Do you think you'll see your mother again?
Yes. Yes, I do. I feel pretty confident about that, and my grandparents. And
what are you going to say when you see them?
How's it?
Hey!